I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
How do you use technology in order to persuade and to manipulate, essentially? And so what we have now, in my mind, this is just the beginning. It's really just the beginning. If you think it's bad now, 5 years from now, I can't even imagine where this is going.
The Dad Experience.
And welcome again to The Dad Experience. I'm very, very excited to share this episode with everybody because it's some information that we've slightly touched on in the past, but we haven't really dug in and dealt with a lot of it, and we're going to get a fresh perspective on some things that we can observe with our children and our families. So today on the show, we have Dr. Rob Ryer on. Dr. Ryer is a highly respected development and educational psychologist. He's also a media expert who studies the escalating impact of tech, media, and consumerism and its accompanying noises, distractions, distortions, all those things that are plaguing our children, our families, and society. Dr. Ryer has a lot of experience working with top levels of kids' media and entertainment industries, such as Hasbro, LucasArts, some great people he's worked with, and has a lot of extensive training. His experience is involved in as a researcher, a counselor, a speaker, a consultant, educator, and he's also written a couple books. So we're really excited to have his expertise on the show. Welcome, Dr. Rob, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. No problem. You know, we always like to start off our show with who lives with you at home and, you know, what's the makeup of your household? Pets, you know, family, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got a few pets. I got a couple cats, a rabbit who turned out to be one of the greatest pets on the planet. Never expected that. And a 49-year marriage.
Wow.
That's doing well. And so my wife and I we do not have children. And I think I can bring a couple things to the podcast, Adam, that are a result of my 45 years of being in school systems and working with kids at all different ages and stages. So I think I could offer a couple ideas in that direction, having been in those classrooms.
Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't always take a parent to give us the, you know, sometimes it takes, somebody from the outside that's had the work as an observer to give us the tips, because sometimes it's better that way to just have somebody that's on the outside doing that for us. And second of all, congratulations, 49 years of marriage. You need to give us tips on that too, because that's impressive.
Yeah. Thank you. The other thing I think I can add to the conversation today is I've also had about 40 years in the corporate world, the business world, developing products and programs, all the way from Spielberg and Lucas and Nike and Mattel and toy companies. And one of the things that's fascinating about the combination of these two backgrounds is that in the world of business and in the world of toys and games and so forth, it's the experience led me to writing a book about that was called Kidnapped, How Irresponsible Marketers Are Stealing the Minds of Your Children. And that book came out of 40 years of experience in the trenches, in businesses. And during that period of time, there was really, and I think your listeners should know this, you know, that my experience was I kept trying to bring psychology and child development into the boardroom. Take it from the classroom, which I was also working in, into the boardroom. And it was virtually something that was not too much respected or allowed in the boardroom. So the development of children was not really on the minds of the business people. It was more about the stockholders and using formulas that work and make lots of money. And that was important for me to know, because it also allowed me to disconnect from that world. And having failed in that world, I would say as a person that could have brought child development into that world, it was just time to go, because it wasn't something that they wanted.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wonder if you know, now with the advent, even with all the algorithms that are predicting everything we do, you know, I've even read somewhere that people, you know, are thinking that their phones are listening to them. But at some point too, I've heard that it's that the algorithms are getting so good at predicting what we want that, you know, it's making it much worse. Do you think that that has played an even bigger impact now in development in our children's lives? Because, you know, our kids could be watching, let's say they're, you know, a teenager and they're watching something on YouTube and it's starting to predict their habits. I mean, have you seen or dealt with anything like that currently? Because these algorithms, like I said, they're getting so much better. Yeah. And it's like, it's scary because there's sometimes I'll be scrolling through a feed, you know, for me, and I'll be like, wow, I was just thinking about that. Is it watching me? But obviously it's things that I'm interested in, and these algorithms are just so powerful. What's your take on that? Have you found that that's starting to become worse? Or
yeah, well, actually, I was asked to be part of a group of people 20 years ago that was developing that, and were trying to say, hey, bring your psychology and what you understand about manipulation into the picture and help us do more of this. And that was something 20 years ago that I, you know, but at this point in time, it's gone way, way, way beyond that. In fact, Stanford University has a department that's run, that's called persuasive design is a nice word for saying it. But that's what they call it now. And you can look that up on the internet. And it's all about how do you use technology in order to persuade and to manipulate, essentially. And so what we have now, in my mind, this is just the beginning. It's really just the beginning. If you think it's bad now, 5 years from now, I can't even imagine where this is going. Because when Sean Parker and the Google people and the Facebook people started to develop the idea of Facebook and social media, they admittedly had no idea what they were doing about addiction. And so even on our website, Live Above the Noise, we have Sean Parker's interview, who was one of the founders of Facebook. And he said, you know, we brought the people together. We brought the persuasive design experts, the 100 PhDs in psychology, some of them from Stanford, to say, how do we manipulate the children? They wouldn't use that word. They'd say, how do we persuade better? And we got them and their team to help us. But we had no idea at the time that we were going to create international addiction to smartphones. And now we have a complete planet that is addicted to smartphones. And they said, we're sorry. We made our money. We did a great job making the money that we came to make. But we're awful sorry, folks, that we addicted the planet. And that's their thinking about their behavior. So they didn't understand at the time how, you know, they knew how to manipulate and to reinforce behavior, but they had no idea how far this was going. And so now what you see is, I even did a little study the other day. I sat in the mall the other day on a bench and I watched people go by, and it was about 8 out of 10 people that I saw, maybe even 9, either had a phone in their hand and were looking at it, or were walking with someone else with a phone in their hand. And of course, I work out at the gym, and about 9 out of 10 people at the gym, you know, are in between sets and working out, have phones in their hand, and you're going, wow, this is the new world, and it's highly, highly, highly addictive.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting about all that and how addictive it is, and like how they're gearing it towards children? You know, even when I was a kid, you know, the government stepped in and was like, listen, you can't gear cigarette ads to kids. You can't gear alcohol ads to kids. But and I think I've read somewhere, and you might be able to shed some light on maybe a better statistics, but I read somewhere that phone addiction is way worse or faster growing than like smoking or drinking addictions. But that, you know, that's something I'm just trying to pull out from somewhere that I read a long time ago. Maybe you've researched it, but it's crazy how there's nothing there to regulate this more for our children, because it seems so important that we were so adamant about getting rid of the Camel off of the Camel cigarette pack because it was a cartoon and kids were, gravitating to. I remember that specifically from my childhood. But why aren't we doing that? Or have you seen folks starting to, or companies starting to try and do that?
Well, we're working, my partner Wayne, who is up in Canada, Wayne Yurcher, and I, who have the podcast on Live Above the Noise, are working with CCFC, which is a campaign for commercial-free childhood. That's a big organization out of Harvard affiliates. And they're making some noise and they are, really attacking this issue from, I think there's a group within or affiliated with that organization of 180 different doctors and PhDs in psychology that are very, very concerned and are constantly creating campaigns and an understanding for parents about how bad this is. So there's movement taking place at that level, to understand this. But on the government level, of course, it's free speech and all the other 1% manipulators that are calling the shots, essentially. So I don't know what's going to happen. I do know that it is it's going to get worse. And it brings up, because I know you're very interested in communication and how we can facilitate communication with kids on different levels. I believe today that the second biggest problem on the planet, other than climate change being number one, is this idea of what has happened to communication, to a child's ability to communicate. And I think what's not being understood, I have a concept called center point communication. And you could think of it this way. If you drew a line across the piece of paper, a blank piece of paper in the middle of the paper, horizontal line from one end to the other, and you put a marble or a ping pong ball in the very, very center of that line, and you said, okay, what's to the left and what's to the right? So if you said, communication coming from the outside, which would be all the manipulators and tech and media and consumerism and so forth, that's all on the right side. And on the left side is communication coming from inside the child. So the child's pure when they're born and they're young and their imagination and they play and they have all this inner kind of imaginative communication when they're younger. That communication, the center point idea says you should always be able to communicate to the left of them, of the center for inner communication, as well as to the right of the center for outer. And it's a balance between going left and going right and never losing the inner communication. And so what I've seen happening, because the inner communication is essentially how that develops and unfolds over time is you learn to monitor, to self-reflect, to understand what's going on inside you, and then you take control of what's going on, and then you hear your internal dialogue, and then you shape your internal dialogue. That's the hierarchy of development that you want to take place. So you're in charge of your inner thinking and you can change it at will. You can begin to think about your own thinking and alter that thinking. That's all taking place on the left side of the center point and should be unfolding over time so that by the time you get into your preteens, you're developing better and better skills of understanding that into your teen years and then into your adult years. Because the part of the brain that allows for all that to happen takes 25 years to develop. It's not this little thing that happens when you're a kid. It's a 25-year window. So if you don't nurture the left side, the inner communication at the youngest possible ages, and not allow that to be usurped or taken away by the outside communication, which is the smartphone, the television, the media, because the brain is going to rewire according to the stimulus coming in. So a child doesn't really have a choice. That stimulation that is being taken in is wiring at all times, rewiring the brain. And so what you see happening is what I see happening at even the higher levels, whether it's high school or college, where a number of kinds of behaviors have showed up that were never there before. And you say, well, that's because external communication has really taken over. So those things are like, what happened to focus, for example, in these college students in terms of their ability to focus? What happens to the way they organize their information or regulate incoming information or do planning or initiate tasks? All those kinds of things that are critical for higher creativity are being short-circuited because the inner communication is being rewired to be dominantly outer communication. So with your two young children, it's like the question would be, what can I do to maintain inner communication and not lose that as they move into the next phase of their development, which will be dominated by friends and social media and other kinds of circles of influence around.
Yeah. And, you know, something I thought of while you were, you know, telling us a little bit about that background. Do you think that there's a direct correlation? You know, again, I don't have stats in front of me. I'm not, this is just something that is an observation from my end, but you hear there's a greater increase in ADD and ADHD. And, you know, do you think that has any direct relation to that outer communication and how readily available it is and how much and how fast things are changing for us as far as like getting information? You know, you could be reading about something happening on the other side of the world with, you know, some sort of anything that happens on the other side of the world. But then you're also hearing about something that's happening on your own doorstep, you know, that there was a robbery in the neighborhood or something like that. Do you think all that mass media and all that access to that is increasing that? Do you think, does that have any direct correlation to that in your experience?
Well, if you look at the latest data that it's on mental health in children, it's really, really scary. I mean, there's a 60% increase in depression between 2009 and 2017 among 14 to 17 year olds, a 60%.
That's huge.
The emergency rooms are full of suicidal possibilities for kids between, I think it's double the amount of suicides or potential suicides between 2007 and 2015 for teens. So we have these kids on a smartphone, maybe 9 hours a day. Out of the 9 hours a day they're on a screen, 93% of that time is entertainment. So all of that's being wired into the brain to give them a dopamine rush or a chemical rush, a feel-good rush is what happens from entertainment, and it's biochemical. You know, so it's on a brain-based biochemical of, I feel good when I watch this. I feel good when I do social media. I feel good. So I'm going to do more of that and more of that. And what happens over time is that it becomes more and more difficult to do the things that aren't fun, that don't give you that same kind of sensation of feeling good. So when you get into a classroom and you say to a student, even at a college level, we're going to do a little report on this particular topic. So let's have that ready in 2 weeks. And here's the topic, blah, blah, blah. And it's a research report. So this opens up the question with 30 kids in the classroom at a university level is like, well, can I use Wikipedia to copy the stuff? No, it's got to be a 40-page minimum report. 40 pages. I can't even do what are you talking? Are you crazy? You know, that kind of thing. And you're going, you know, it used to be that when you did a project, it was a project. You did the research, you did the homework, you focused.
Yeah.
But now what you're seeing is a whole different kind of complaint about how hard it is. Hard. That's too hard. And if you look carefully at that, you're really understanding what's going on, which is if you're trained in entertainment and 9 hours a day on a smartphone and you're getting rewired for feel good information, whether it's social media or entertainment. Then when it doesn't feel good, it feels too hard. And that's the shift that has taken place now from inner communication and the ability to stay focused and do that, and the outer communication. Give me more outer. Give me more outer is what you hear all the time. So that's a problem. That's a big problem.
That's a huge problem. It's interesting to get that perspective on it, because I don't think that, you know, as if we're in it as parents right now, or we're in it as just normal consumers of the world, you know, somebody that's not studying it, we don't realize what's going on totally, because it is geared to be that addiction, or it's geared to make you want to grab that phone again or grab that iPad or whatever you're using to continue to get that release and to continue to get that information to make yourself feel better. This is a great place for us to take a quick break. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can catch our podcast as well as many other great podcasts on their app that you can get at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. Stick around after this episode to hear about another great podcast from Parents On Demand that, if you like the Dad Experience, we're sure you're going to like. So stick around after the break. We're going to talk more about communication and the technology pitfalls that are kind of plaguing our families, and all those distractions that are plaguing our families right now in the current society. Hey guys, I'm really excited to tell you about a pair of underwear that I absolutely love. The first thing I'm looking for when I'm buying a brand new pair of underwear is, are they comfortable and do they not ride up? Well, this underwear that I've got from Lambs, they do the trick. So along with that, there's some extra added bonuses. Not only are they very comfortable, but they're antimicrobial, anti-odor, and breathable. They have free returns, and they guarantee their underwear for 30 days. So if you're not happy with it, before 30 days are up, ship it back. And as always, they have free shipping. And one little extra feature that is amazing with this underwear is they are wireless radiation proof. Yes, they have 360 degrees of wireless radiation protection. So those cell phones, those smartwatches, anything that might let off a little bit of radiation, you're protected with these. So you're going to want to try them out. Get your pair. For Dad Experience listeners, right now you can get 15% off your first purchase by using the link in our show notes. So go check them out and get yourself a pair of Lambs. You won't be disappointed. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We're talking to Dr. Rob about the technology distractions, things that are going around us, distractions, how we can better, communicate with our families and create better spaces for them to become better people and better contributing members to society. We talked a little bit about it before the break about the technology and how that satisfies the outer communication. Have you worked with families or folks, let's say, we're not a horrible family with technology, but we're not amazing. And I'm probably the worst one in the whole household here. I'm not going to lie. And I'm sure my wife would appreciate me saying that. But have you worked with families to try and figure out a better system? Because it's not going away. And it is great for some entertainment sometimes for us when we need it. And it's also great for things that we may need to find to get information. And it's nice for that. But how do we use it more effectively so it doesn't cause problems, and so we can help our children develop more and we can become a better, healthier family? Have you worked with folks on some suggestions on how to do that?
Actually, you would find this interesting being in the a musician and being affiliated with entertainment. I take an approach called the inner theater. And it's basically, I have a dimension of methodology called innertainment, I-N-N-E-R. And the idea of entertainment and innertainment, the distinction between the two, is saying, look, with kids being addicted and adults needing to compensate for overload and chaos and society and stress, everyone's going to continue to be involved in entertainment. That's never going away, and it offers great relief. So let's not make entertainment wrong. Let's use it in a completely different way. So entertainment takes the perspective that if you have you can create within your child something called their inner theater as early as possible, and base that on the idea of your child has a backstage, a front stage, and a future stage. So you start with the metaphor of backstage, front stage, future stage. On their backstage or in their backstage is who they are, what makes them unique, what their individual differences are. And you, as a parent, are in a position to really figure out where the power is, where their, what they love, what their background, what their unique qualities are, what their passions are, what they gravitate toward. That's all under, sometimes under the radar. But we keep it present to understand what's in the backstage of my child that I can use to motivate. Because what the name of the game is now is to motivate them toward inner communication. And that's not easy, especially as the outer communication continues to grow in its power. So by understanding your own child's backstage individual differences, passions, those become motivational dimensions that you can use. Then you move into the front stage of the inner theater. And the inner theater front stage is, what is my child's story and what is the story that's going on in the world outside them? And you introduce the idea of you have your own story. Let's talk about your story. And you build that into your parenting experience as early as possible. That allows you then to interact with your child with reading stories while they're younger. And as they move into television and stories on television and movies and videos, you can constantly work with the idea of like, well, look at their story. Look at the rabbit story. Look at the kangaroo story. Look at the story of this character, so that you're introducing the idea of story, story, story. And you start with reading at the earliest stages. That allows you, as they develop more, to then begin understanding, have your child understand, like, what do you think this character loves the most? So now what you're doing is you're creating this inner communication where the child begins to learn how to think about the character first. What is that character's values? What is that character's virtues? What is that character? Why do I like that character? And you can begin to work with the characters in the story, but you really are working with the child understanding their own dimensions, just like you would if you saw a character in a film. What makes him a great character? He has certain dimensions, strengths, weaknesses, conflicts. And he in the journey of the character in many kinds of movies and so forth is to overcome adversity. So you use that at the earliest possible ages when you're working with books and reading and stories and entertainment and videos and movies. And you begin that process as early as possible and then transition that. If you start it early, it then becomes a discussion that can be taken into the dining room when you're having dinner. And you could talk about my story and my favorite characters and why I like these characters and what their values are and so forth. And that's an area that then becomes familiar to the child. And it's something that you can take right up into adolescence as they get older. And it becomes a great kind of way to work with inner communication and develop it. And as they move up the scale developmentally, then it allows you to say to them, why are your values different than that character's values? What makes their story different than your story? So if you can begin the process early, base it around entertainment and story, transition it early enough up into adolescence, then it's not this thing where it's my entertainment, Dad, or my entertainment. I don't want you to know what I'm doing. It's more of an open window that gets discovered earlier and it becomes familiar and becomes something that offers a whole new way to communicate internally about what's going on within the child and the distinctions between their story and your story.
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of goes along with that, that I've noticed more and more, and it's something that I definitely want to work on with my children, because I've seen it being in the education field. I've seen it all over and through my colleagues. And, you know, with this technology, it's a great tool, but we also are putting ourselves into some situations where there's less ability to or need to face-to-face self-manage or self-advocate, or just even self-manage and self-advocate for themselves. You kind of briefly talked about it when you talked a little bit about the report, like, oh my gosh, this is so much work. It's too much. It's like, I see that as well when information gets passed on to students. Like if it's a verbal communication, it may not always get home, and I want to avoid that one because I want them to be able to sort that information and be able to comprehend that. But how do we better prepare our children for in a technology-based world where a lot of things are done online and a lot of their friendships are online? So there isn't as much face-to-face communication, but there's still a huge need for that in this world and in society. How do we help our children better navigate that so they can be better self, better advocate for themselves and manage themselves better? Do you have anything that you've used for that or worked with people on that?
Well, first of all, there is something that a lot of parents don't understand. They're called mirror neurons. And mirror neurons say that that we have these kinds of brain neurons that actually are taught like in certain kinds of skill activities where what I watch, like that being my role models, my parents, I actually take that information in by mirroring what I'm watching, and I become that thing that I'm watching. So, for example, here's the way it would play out if you were in sports. You know, somebody would say, I'm a professional athlete, needs some help. He's a terrible free throw shooter in basketball. He's going to be watching a model that has the right technique, the right skills, and the right, touch toward free throwing. What he's doing is, you wouldn't think this is happening, but his own brain is recording what he's watching, and he's altering his own personal brain structure by using mirrors, neurons, by watching another. So if you take that into the world of family and you say, how do I train interpersonal skills? I do that in my family. I become the model. I use stories. I use entertainment. I use discussions. I use family gatherings. I use everything I can to develop the skills and model those skills to my child, who will automatically learn that if he's watching me do it. So that's the first layer of learning, that is like within the family structure. And it's not going to happen so much in schools. On our podcast, we just interviewed a couple of teachers that have been in the teaching profession for 25 years. And so these guys have a book that just came out called Screen Schooled. It's Matt Miles and Joe Clement are the authors. And they're discussing, here's the way it is, mom and dad. You don't see this at all. You have no idea, not a clue of what we see on a daily basis. And they've said things like, if I let one of my students go to the restroom, he cannot go for 5 minutes without picking up a phone or putting ear pods in his ear to distract himself. He's already trained at a high school level that it's painful. Actually painful for that person to be alone with himself, silent with himself. He has to distract. He's already hardwired for personal distraction. Well, what that means to me is, boy, if you can't be quiet and sit quietly and learn to listen to yourself, you're done. You are done, because all the research in psychology says what it takes to be successful in the future is the self-reflective emotional intelligence skill. It doesn't have anything to do with IQ. So the IQ idea is totally incomplete now. It used to be the way you measure a kid that's smart, and you say, yeah, great IQ. I would never do that today. I wouldn't even think of their IQ today, because I've seen too many examples of kids that would be less than average IQ that were brilliant at something. And you said, well, wait, how could that be? I have a personal example. I have a wife who is dyslexic, severely dyslexic. So we got married 49 years ago, and she's so dyslexic that if I said, hey, go north, drive north. You want to, you got to get up to in California. I want you to go north for about 15 or 20 miles. She would wind up 150 miles south before she called me and said, it's not where you said it was. And I said, it's north, honey. It's north. And she's, I don't know north. I can't find north. You know, I don't know how to feel north or even get to north or even that's. And yet she's brilliant, absolutely brilliant at what she does. She's a men's hairstylist. She owns her own business. She's very, very successful. One of the top men's hairstylists in Los Angeles, because she found her passion. She developed her inner communication to alter her behavior, to be in charge of her behavior from the inside, and developed her skills and passion. Nothing to do with IQ. I don't even think she would have got out of high school if they gave her an IQ test. So it's not about IQ any longer. It's about something we call the inner IQ, which is that self-understanding, that internal understanding of your inner communication. And that, if that is not taught by the family first, the parents first, it will not be taught. There is no one creating inner IQ on the outside world for your child. They're not going to get it there. And so inner IQ and this inner communication is responsible for well-being and success in the world. You can't have a high level of wisdom or well-being without developing the inner communication. It's just not going to happen, because you will not have the toolbox to understand yourself enough and to change your behavior if you need to change it. So it's up to the family to create the modeling at the basic level, and knowing that kids will, they'll model off of what they're viewing. That's the starting place. And then hopefully surround yourself with other people that get how important the inner communication is, because schools will not do it, and they're still working off of the old ideas of IQ.
And you know, this is so much information for our listeners to chew on. I know there's a lot of great things that you've shared today, and you know, we're definitely going to have to communicate again here, because I'd love to have you on again. But before we kind of let you go here and wrap up the show, you've worked with so many families and so many things you've done, and we usually do a thing here, things we can't wait to see through our children's eyes. But I wanted to kind of take that and adjust it a little bit for our conversation and our purposes. What has been the most rewarding experience that you've had since you've been working with children and with families?
I think the most rewarding is I spent some time working with heroin and meth addicts that were college bound. They were in transition. They were out of rehab, but they weren't healed enough from their addiction to get into the university. So there's a place in California that was a transitional college that prepared them to go back into regular university setting. And I had the opportunity to bring them a course called Entertainment. And in that course called Entertainment, they were able to discover who they were, what their story was, how it impacted others, how they were altering that story. Basically, all of the things that we've talked about today were part of the coursework. And they worked on themselves to the point where each one of the students was responsible for standing up and giving a presentation of what their story was at this point in their journey. And that was probably one of the most profound experiences I've had, because it really taught me how important that inner world is and how important it is, given how difficult it is for people to do therapy or afford therapy or anything like that. There's a whole different way to go about that by having students learn how to understand who they are and what their inner story is. And then if you could take it to the next step and present it to the public, beautiful. beautiful, because now you have raised the bar up even another level where you're proud of that story and you're willing to share it.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful and pretty impressive. So, you know, this is your chance now too. Tell us a little bit about where folks can find your podcast, any books you're working on, how they can find you on social media, all those great things. Let our audience know where they can get more from you and the things that you're working on.
So we're the podcast is called liveabovethenoise.com, and we're doing a series of interviews with people, as well as a step-by-step approach to learning how to live above the noise, which we define as distortion, distraction, disruption, and overload, not auditory noise only, but different things that are happening in society. And the book I'm working on now is called FutureWise. And that's a book that's all about the challenge of choice in the culture of noise.
All right. Well, we'll definitely put all that stuff in our show notes too, so people can find the podcast and find the find your website and all that great stuff, so they can get more information from you guys. I appreciate all the work that you're doing and everything that you shared with us today, and I appreciate having you on the show today, Dr. Rob.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being on. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Don't forget that the Dad Experience, you can always email us, experienceanddad@gmail.com. If you have a question for us or a guest like Dr. Rob, if you have something, we can always get in touch with them and address that and put it on another episode here. You know, if you just have an idea for the show or want to be on the show, let us know. You can also find us on most major social media platforms. Just look for the Dad Experience podcast. And until next time, thanks for joining us on the Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes.